Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today with episode 271 of the Ham Radio Podcast. No Carrick this week, no Dustin, just yours truly. So get cozy because you're going to be hearing a lot of my voice. Now, you may be wondering how this all transpired. We just came off of our most listened to episode of the year. Thank you guys so much for the support on last week's show. Obviously, we wanted to follow that up with a strong one. Now, here's how everything transpired, right? I have been making a ton of Bethesda content, a ton of Xbox content. I've quite frankly been overworking myself. I've been going at it constantly. I really haven't had a day off in a long while. So I was thinking to myself, you know what? I kind of just want to kick this weekend off a little bit earlier. I asked the boys in our Twitter group chat. I was like, hey guys, would you mind covering this week's show? Now, Carrick was already feeling under the weather. He was like, dude, I just canceled both my shows. So I'm actually already out as it is. And then Dustin was like, hey man, it's up to you on how you want to handle things. So I said, you know what? The viewers shouldn't suffer because I quite honestly am just feeling a little bit lazy. So I decided, let me just do a solo show. I'll go ahead. I'll answer some questions from our Patreon Discord. I'll go over some of the major news this week and just have a one-on-one conversation. It's been a while since I've been able to do this on a more public scale. For those of you who are patrons, you already know we do an extra slice of ham every single week. We did miss this past week because, like I said, I was under the weather. I really wasn't able to continue to podcast and utilize my voice with good energy for long stretches of time. I was just going to focus on getting a patron video out this week. So the schedule kind of got tossed up in the air. I do apologize for that. But those of you who are listeners of Extra Slice of Ham do know you get those solo shows pretty much every week where we take additional gaming news topics or random topics like food and crazy questions, man. The stuff that I get asked on that show, it blows my mind. Anyway, it's a really fun show. It's very laid back, usually around an hour each week, which gives you guys like 4 hours of podcast content every week between our normal show as well as our bonus show. It seems to be working out really well. I'm happy we have a good system here. And like I said, last week was our most listened to episode. That was awesome, especially because it was one of our best ones, man. Like that episode was hilarious. I highly recommend you go back and listen to episode 270 if you have yet to. It was actually one of the funniest things. Like the nice job Phil Spencer story. I will not spoil it, but I've been talking about that all week, man. That shit was too funny. Anyway, as per usual with our introduction, I like to let you guys know what I'm working on. Also, I like to promote the Patreon just a little bit, but you can also become a member, get some of the same perks here on YouTube. The only thing that you do miss out on is the Patreon Discord. The reason for that is because there isn't a way to directly connect the invites for Discord to YouTube members. So I have to keep that exclusive to the Patreon. So if you're interested in that, participating, asking questions that we do answer at the end of the show in mass, then that will be your ticket there. But for those of you who want things like Extra Slice of Ham, early access to this show, bonus exclusive videos that do eventually go live to the public, if you're not interested in paying that alongside your name in the credits in each of my videos, you are more than welcome to sign up to the membership on YouTube or join up on the Patreon. We've been getting a surge of new listeners and new patrons, new members. It's been amazing. And a lot of that's because of our weekly live streams. I had to skip that this week too. That's when you know, man. Like, look, I don't like to skip out on anything. I like to keep a really tight, rigid schedule. It gives me a sense of productivity. It makes me feel really good. I love my job. So for me to like skip out on the fun parts, it sucks, right? So I do apologize if after all of that exciting coverage that I did skip a beat here. But anyway, like I do with our intros, let's talk about what we're playing, right? This is our chance to just unwind, talk about a week full of games, and I've been bouncing really between two titles this week. Let me start off by saying I have officially done it. I have officially completed Trails of Cold Steel 1. This may have felt like one of the longest video games ever. Now, for those who aren't familiar, by the way, Trails of Cold Steel is a JRPG series. I played the first entry on the Vita. It's now available on the PS4. It's available on the Switch, or at least 3 and 4 are going to be available on the Switch. But Trails of Cold Steel 1 I had on the Vita. I bought it back in, I want to say, 2015. I remember finishing Persona 4 Golden in 2014. I was like, man, I need more Persona-like titles in my life. This was one that was strongly recommended. I don't know why it was. It's really not like Persona at all, other than the fact that you get bonding points for spending time with classmates. But it's not... There's no game like Persona, I've realized. Because I remember someone recommended to me the Caligula Effect Overdose. That was supposed to be a Persona-like game because you're out of high school and you spend time with friends and there are these sort of social links, so to say. But no game is like Persona. And I've just accepted that. But Trails of Cold Steel is incredibly strong on its own. I was really slogging through it, to be honest. The first 60 hours are literally just world building. That's all it is. Chapter by chapter, they build the world and you're like, oh my God, man, get to something really interesting. But I know I have heard too many good things about this game in particular, how it wraps up, but also the entirety of the series and how it just consistently improves. And people were right, man. The last 25, 30 hours of this game are spectacular because they ramp up. They have a clear, concise focus where they're not building the world because the world has already been established. And there is payoff, right? It depends how interested you are. And what's sad is that you can't just leap into two. I've heard you can kind of leap into three, but I'm glad I played it through. I'm glad I made it to the end because the ending to Trails of Cold Steel 1 is so nutty that I actually immediately ordered the sequel. Now, a little story on that. A hilarious story on that. I finished it, I want to say it was Monday night. I finish it Monday night, right? I go to Amazon. I see what's called the Trails of Cold Steel 2 Relentless Edition, which has one of the most fire steelbooks ever. By the way, don't look at it if you don't want to have something spoiled for you, like something very significant. So I'm like, oh, this looks insane. I have to get this. So I immediately order it, and it says, your order will arrive in like 2 days. I'm like, what? I have to sleep once, wake up, go through a day, and then I wake up again, and boom, it's there. That's exciting, right? Like, to me, because I was ordering it at 11 at night, I was like, it might be a little bit late, but I was super pumped to see it was coming, right? And so the day comes, package does not arrive. Then all of a sudden, my order updates, it's coming late, and they're like, it's coming October 1st or the 2nd. It's October 2nd as I record this, 2 in the afternoon, still nothing Amazon. And you know what's funny is I spent $50 on this game, right? I spent $50 on a brand new copy of the Relentless Edition because it's not like rare, but it wasn't printed in a vast amount. And so I was like, all right, I'll cop this for $50. I think it'll be worth it. I saw online a package of sealed Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 steelbooks for $80 on eBay. And I was like, oh, why didn't I just do that? I would have had it by now because if I would have had to wait to this point in time anyway. And I would have had both of them brand new in their steelbooks for what was a great deal. They're both like $50 games. It was, why didn't I do that? Oh, frustrates me to no end. But anyway, I finished the game, really liked how it wrapped up. I'm a huge fan of the series now. I'm looking forward to playing more. Would I recommend it is probably a question I may get from some of you out there. I think once it hits chapter 3, which is about 20 hours into the game, that's when it really starts to gain a focus of like a major villain group. And from there, you start to see the bigger picture. The game is at its strongest when it's focusing on the tension between nations. That's what's sort of going on here. It's a very politically charged game where you have the Erebonia and then you have Calvard, I think it is, on opposite ends of each other, these two big empires. And in the middle, you have Crossbell, who's this sort of neutral nation that is now declaring their independence. And it's changing the order of how things work in the world and how these people respond to it. There's also this other faction that's trying to unwind things. And so ultimately, you have a very, like I said, politically charged story about the powers of government, the social classes and how people are treated, whether they're nobles or common folk. There's a lot there, and it's really good. It's handled well. It's just about its pacing. I know some people care about payoff. For me, when it comes to story payoff, I think there's a way to tell something interesting while making it feel rewarding when you get to the end. This was a like 2014 2013 JRPG. It was made for the PS3 and the Vita originally. So there is some definite like age there that I understand. Storytelling has come a long way since then. You got to think that's when we were just picking up our Xbox Ones, our PS4s. It's crazy to think about, right? So it does feel a little dated. I know Trails of Cold Steel 3 is when the series actually gets a budget. I would say look into it, though. It is a solid series. Combat's great. What I started playing after that was Genshin Impact, but also Lost Odyssey. So I'm working on a patron-exclusive video, member-exclusive video right now. It will go live to the public in December when I'm on my little vacation. Just playing some of these unsung heroes on the Xbox 360, we'll say. And one of them, you know, they're exclusive. They're kind of stuck on the Xbox family. They're not even ported to PC. One of them is Lost Odyssey. This was a JRPG. I wouldn't even say JRPG. It's got a lot of Western influence. I'd more so say RPG. By a Japanese studio that released in 2008. And I would have thought this was like a early 2010s game, man. This title was so far ahead of its time. It is spectacular. I don't know how, this hasn't been recommended to me strongly. I'm very, very surprised people weren't like, have you played this game? It is amazing, man. Really interesting story. You play as Kaim, who's a Eternal, which means that he never dies. So he's seen thousands of years of war and conflict and, you know, the rise and fall of society. He's just been through it all. And so he's a mercenary, and you start off the game in this big battle that's ensuing between these, I forget the name of them right now. I think it was Gotsa and Ura, I want to say, are the two nations that were kind of battling it out. It ends with suddenly a giant thing of like lava coming out of the sky and just melting everyone except Kaim. Kaim lives because he's eternal, and he has no idea how he's an eternal. But it's just that alone there is what makes the story so interesting, because they have this mechanic, which I don't know if this is actually part of the DLC or not. I know there's DLC for the game, but it's called 1,000 Years of Dreams. And so you'll be walking around and certain things will happen in the game, like little conversations you'll hear or moments in the story that'll evoke these dreams. And there'll be these mini visual novels that sort of paint a picture of a random part in Kaim's memory that he's forgotten a lot of his past. And it's explained properly why that's the case, by the way. And it makes sense. And it's not your typical like amnesiac protagonist sort of thing. It is handled quite well, I'd say. It's far from a trope, although it seems like one at first. But he starts to gradually uncover his memories. And these memories aren't core to the story. But for example, one I read was a story of these people called upstreamers who, like, I think walked with the direction of the wind. And they were sort of like nomads. They'd plant their camps along with where the wind is, and they'd decide to either live like a normal town life, or eventually they'd feel the wind would carry them, and they'd go out on a journey and follow the wind with other folks who were upstreamers. And so he met this little girl. He was like a mercenary still. So he's helping this little girl who was an upstreamer. He ends up coming around like 80 years later, and this little girl is now an old woman who is being put to rest. And it's like an emotional experience. You're like, wow, like he said like he saw conflict in between that. Like he went to war. He battled a couple places. He helped around in a couple of nations. And he comes back and like this woman has lived her full life and has passed on while he is still the same age. And so he's sort of this cold, detached protagonist, Kaim. But yet the way they humanize him over time, just a spectacular game. It's by the creators of Final Fantasy, so the combat's very reminiscent of that. It's very much like, say, Final Fantasy VII Remake. You even see this nowadays where you'll equip certain items, like bangles or whatever, and they'll have skills. And so as you complete battles, you'll get SP and for that item. So let's say the item has a skill that says, like, you do bonus magic damage when your life is at a critical state. So let's say you need 8 SP to unlock that. So you complete a couple of battles, you get your 8 SP. Now that is a skill you've unlocked, and then you can set that onto your characters. So there's always this sense of progression in every single battle, mob battle, boss battles. This is the first RPG I found myself running around triggering random battles because I wanted to get every skill. It's one of those games also where, like the older Final Fantasy games, there's a fixed camera angle, which can feel a little... I haven't had problems with it, but it definitely feels a little weird to not have full control of your camera. But I do have to say, it is phenomenal. Really good RPG. The other game that I have been playing this week is Genshin Impact. What a strange game this is. I know it's not in my wheelhouse. Like, there's two things that aren't in my wheelhouse on my channel. I know that. Like, videos that are sent out and I don't want to say destined to fail, but they really have a strong chance of failing, and they have to get some serious luck to succeed or have to be, like, extremely high effort, like my future Persona video. And that's, like, A, Nintendo, which, you know, you look at my Super Mario All-Stars video, and I know it was a little late, but, like, what a flop. You look at that, Nintendo, as well as, like, super hardcore JRPGs, and Genshin Impact is absolutely that. But Genshin Impact is very interesting because it is a free-to-play open-world RPG gacha game. So it's very heavily inspired by Breath of the Wild, and what I define this game as, and this punchline is precisely why I want to make a video, because it defines it so well. This game is a wolf in sheep's clothing. It looks like something is not as welcoming. It presents you this wonderful world that you can explore, and it's got all these Breath of the Wild elements. And how do I describe it, man? The game never stops you, which is really good for a free, because like its structure alone, it cannot time gate you. It cannot kick you out, or at least it wouldn't make sense at all to kick you out of the world. But the way it works is it is driven by its gacha elements so hard that I sit there and I go, why couldn't you have had like a free version like this and then a $60 version that I could have just paid for? And it would have gotten rid of all of this, because at the core of the game, of course, are these like loot driven random drops. As you complete objectives like opening chests in the world, completing quests, you get these gems that you can then turn into a certain currency that you can then perform what's called a wish. And these wishes allow you to spawn random characters. I think you do what's called like a, you can roll either one, which would be stupid, or do a 10 roll. And you have the chance of getting a 5-star character. These are, of course, the best characters in the game. And I'm not complaining, because once again, it's a free game, right? I'm not complaining at the notion of them wanting to make money. They have to do it somehow. But it's more so that everything is based around the gacha elements, and the game would be amazing if it weren't. They had such a good game here that compromised its elements for two things. Number one, the gacha stuff. Which, it's an interesting experiment. I'm curious to see how it plays out. Right now, the game hasn't stopped me. But number two is that you can feel the limitations because they squeezed this game onto mobile. So now every single update is subjected to, can this fit on a mobile device? It's also on PS4. It's also on PC. And that's what excited me initially. I didn't know this game was going to be on phones, because when I saw Genshin Impact and I saw it was a free-to-play, gotcha, open-world PS4 and PC game, I thought, wow, okay, this has a chance to be different because now the updates fit that hardware. But once I found out it was on phones, I was like, man, this stinks. So I'm adventurer rank 13, I want to say. Co-op unlocks at 16. I had a couple of buddies who have been playing about a day or so ahead of me. And they got to the co-op. And let's just say, man, that it is really underwhelming co-op. It doesn't let you open chests in the world of the player you're visiting. It limits like the content you can consume. You're pretty much like nothing progresses for you. So you don't benefit from co-op. And it just sounds like a staple to the game. Like, we also have co-op, but it's not the co-op that you'd want. Now I know there are things like not expeditions, but there is a kind of raid system where you can go into these bigger missions with friends. There are certain missions that are like 30 seconds long that you can do with friends. Like, it's just very underwhelming. It's very underwhelming from what I was told. And, you know, my friends have been playing it just like me. So I've sank about like, I want to say 8 hours into the game. It is solid. It is very pretty, but you just, like, I remember going to a store in the game, right? It's like I said, wolf in sheep's clothing. I go to a store because you're playing the game thinking like open world RPG. But I go to a store and then you see like the 80 currencies for how you ascend your character. and the materials that make no fucking sense. And it's like every single gacha game does this, man. You just have these materials in the world that are materials and materials and materials, and they're all like making zero fucking sense. Like, it just, oh, this game could have been so good. It's not that it's a bad game. It just, you can clearly see it was built around these mechanics, and it could have been way, way better. Pardon me. I had to take a drink. Getting worked up there. So it's not like Genshin Impact's a pass. It's a fun game, especially if like you're low on funds, you're looking for something free to play. The game does not stop you, which is commendable. It's great and all. I could totally see this being a game you could just keep playing and not pay a single penny for, which is something to, once again, tip your cap at. It could definitely fall in that group of games like Smite, where Smite is a free-to-play game that I put 300 to 500 hours in before I spent my first dollar on the game. And I'm usually not like that at all, but I mean, between systems and everything, I put a lot of time into Smite. I haven't played in a while, but I put a lot of time into Smite before I gave them money. I would not wait that long for something like Genshin Impact, but yeah, it's just the gacha elements, like the best loot, like weapon-wise, the best characters that have the most diversity. And even when you get the best characters, like the issue is, even if I say I get a 5-star, which I did on my first free roll, I get this 5-star character named Jean. And even if you get her, to make her better to ascend into the late game, you need to roll her again, right? You need to roll her again to get what's called her constellation up, which will unlock all these different passives that make her a much better character. And then she'll be good. But of course, you have to get a bunch of 10 rolls. And just like any gacha game, I don't even have to play this game to know this. Just like any gacha game, the deeper you get, they're going to, you will still get rolls, right? Like, you'll still be able to roll for 10 characters or 10 weapons, whatever. But eventually, it's going to slow down. And eventually, you're going to feel that temptation to pay. And I just don't like that feeling, man. Like I don't like to sound soft as shit, but it actually makes me feel uncomfortable. Like, when I was playing Tales of Crestoria, I liked the game. Great story. Surprisingly great story in that game. But eventually, it's like the fun drops, and they're like, okay, you've had your fun. It's time to give us money. And once again, it's a free game. They got to make money. So it's not like I'm sitting here like, why are you doing this to me, man? I get it. It's one of those things where it's just, just let me pay for these games, man, and get this shit out of here, or minimize this shit. Not unbelievable, but I get it. Anyway, yeah, working on a video for patrons and members, featuring a couple of games on the 360 that are really just stranded there. And once I have Lost Odyssey done, that video should be out this weekend / Monday for patrons and members. Really excited about that one. Got a couple skits in mind. I think some of the videos I'm making for my December break are like the best content I've made. So like, I can't wait for everyone to really lay their eyes on it, because, you know, it's just going to be like day after day of like, because I've had so much time to work on these videos where it's just gonna be day after day of these highly produced videos. And I can't wait for everyone to see them. So yeah, that'll be coming for the public in December. And then patrons and members can go ahead and get it now. All right, let's get into the news. So I'd say the most significant news this week, if you're a Bethesda fan, it's Starfield. But I'm not talking about Starfield in this episode. The reason for that is just, I've made 3 videos on the leaks that have happened. Like, there's nothing more I could literally add to that conversation. Just leaks have happened. As the leaks continue, I will cover them more. If there's anything worth covering. But just for those of you who are looking for additional Starfield stuff, I'm sure we have questions in the patron section. I didn't check, but I'm sure we have some in regards to Starfield. So if you're looking for more of that, I would hop over to that section. But for now, we're going to talk about what I'd say is the biggest news of the week, and that is CD Projekt Red and a discussion on crunch. And if this truly is actual legitimate crunch, there's been a bit of a development with this story here that I find quite interesting. My initial take on everything that happened on Twitter, for those who don't know, I think it's important to preface this before even getting into the actual story itself, was I am not remotely surprised at all that CD Projekt Red is going into a state of overtime, we'll say, for its employees when it comes to Cyberpunk 2077. This does not catch me off guard at all that CD Projekt Red is doing something like this. but I did find it disappointing. And one, the word I used on Twitter was, is the human sacrifice actually going to be worth it? Now, let me take a sip of water before we continue into the story. I want to preface all of this by saying I am one of the creators on the platform who sort of has a mantra of, it is not my duty to get offended for you on the behalf of people like the workers at CD Projekt Red. It's not my duty to get offended for them. Like, if they vocalize on, say, Twitter or Facebook, or we see a conversation pop up or an email come out that there are disgruntled employees, I feel like that is when I should use my platform to speak out and put pressure on the company to, say, make some changes, right? But if no one is complaining, which I don't think CD Projekt Red is sitting there going, you cannot complain about anything, then I don't really think it's my business to stick my head in and be like, how could you be doing this to them? Now, with that in mind, a lot of times with crunch culture in video games, it's not really optional. You are sometimes told it's optional, but then you get the situation like Rockstar where they say, if you don't do this, you're going to A, not get your bonus at all. Despite you working on the game for like 5 years, you're not going to get your bonus if you don't crunch, or you're going to miss out on X, Y, and Z, or we'll replace you. There's stuff like that that has happened in our games industry, and that's where I think crunch culture gets very toxic. I think there is a nature of overtime in the creative space that at times, I don't want to say you can't avoid, but I say this, and I know working on videos is nothing like working on a game, but I know as a creative, sometimes my passion to make something takes over, and I will work like 3 additional hours on something because I want to, I'm in a flow, and I want to make it as good as possible, and I want to accomplish this task, and my passion for the project takes over the normal amount of man hours I'd want to work. Granted, I am self-employed technically, so I can choose when I walk away, I can choose when I walk in, but I have mental deadlines. I want to get in here at 11 a.m. and I usually work till around dinner, or I'm sorry, I should say like 10, 11 a.m. But I like to work until dinner time. Once dinner time comes up, then I ease into my shower, any exercise I want to do, or I'm sorry, I exercise, I shower, and then I coast into my evening by that point in time. But there are times I'll keep working, even though I started at like, say, 10, I'll work till like 9, you know, because I'm really invested in what I'm doing, or based off my schedule for the rest of the week. It just would make sense to continue working. And all I'm saying is that I know sometimes in the creative space that your passion will take over and you will willingly work those extra hours. I think the difference is with crunch, sometimes overhead will come in and say, like, you've got to do this. And they don't care about the mental health issues that may come along with that. And that's where the conversation gets a bit hairy. Now, the reason pressure has been put on CD Projekt Red is because, and this comes from Bloomberg, I quote, last year, Iwinski and Badowski told Kotaku that they were looking to make CD Projekt Red a more, quote, humane, end quote, place to work. Now, that quote alone, I think, says a lot, that if you want to make your place more humane to work at, it acknowledges that it is currently inhumane. That word choice in its own right is quite alarming when they said that. Now, that was earlier on, right? They were saying that they don't want to go ahead and crunch because then they said, quote, we are known for treating gamers with respect, end quote, Iwinski said. Quote, I actually would like for us to be known for treating developers with respect, end quote. Now, did CD Projekt Red treat their developers with respect when they said that there is going to be extra work 6 day weeks ahead of the game's launch? Well, I'm not going to tell you what to think because I think both sides are completely understandable. However, I'm going to present the information and then give you guys my perspective. And I'd say this is a well-researched perspective at that. So let's start off with the actual quote from the email, which came out through Bloomberg's Jason Schreier. Starting today, the entire development studio is in overdrive, Badowski wrote, elaborating that this meant, quote, your typical amount of work in one day on the weekend, end quote. The extra work would be paid as required by Polish labor laws. Many other video game studios do not pay for overtime. So once again, this right there, that quote there, that extra bit of information there is very important to know, comparing that type of overtime culture to that of something we've seen at EA, Rockstar, so on and so forth. So just do keep that in mind. continues on saying, I take it upon myself to receive the full backlash for the decision, he wrote. I know this is in direct opposition to what we've said about Crunch. It's also in direct opposition to what I personally grew to believe a while back, that Crunch should never be the answer. But we've extended all other possible means of navigating the situation. Now, that I believe is referring to the multiple delays. They've pushed it back comfortably, trying to work it through. And now they're like, okay, for the next couple of weeks, we need to work an extra day, which I think totals out to, I want to say, 6 or 7 extra days of work. So I think that simplifies things a little bit. You can say it's 7 extra days of work or 6 extra days of work, but doing 6 days of work a week with 1 day off, you know, I'll try to just give perspective through my situation. When I do the podcast every Friday, essentially my weekend, like most, doesn't start till Saturday, because when I'm at the office and I'm rendering out like the audio file for you guys to get it to early access, I'm really never home and through the door until like 10 p.m. on Saturday, or I'm sorry, on Friday nights. So my weekend doesn't start till I literally go in, I shower or whatever, I hit the sheets, and I wake up. And so your weekend gets a little shorter, right? Like usually you want to be out the door by like 5, 6. So then you got a little bit of your Friday leading into your Saturday. So now you've just got, say, your Sunday. And so that's tough, man. It's tough regardless. I don't think anyone's taking away from that. Adam Badowski quoted Jason Schreier's article with a little bit of a write-up. And then I'm going to provide a little more perspective here, because like I said, this is an evolving conversation. I don't know if there's truly a right or wrong here. And by that, I mean, if you're saying Crunch is, I'm not saying Crunch isn't bad, by the way, but if you're saying this is Crunch and this is bad, you're not wrong. I don't really think you're trying to, like, you know, get upset on behalf of the developers of CD Projekt Red. I think there is some truth there. But on the other hand, once I present some extra information, I mean, it's not like they're not making out really well on this. So let's talk. Adam Badowski writes on his Twitter in response to Jason Schreier, these last 6 weeks are our final sprint on a project we've all spent much of our lives on, which is true. This was announced in what, like 2012, 2013? Something we care deeply for. The majority of the team understands that push, especially in light of the fact that we've just sent the game to CERT, and every day brings us visibly closer to shipping a game we want to be proud of. This is one of the hardest decisions I've had to make, but everyone is well compensated for every extra hour they put in. And like in recent years, 10% of the annual profit of our company generate, 10% of the annual profit our company generates in 2020 will be split directly among the team. Now, I am friends with them, so you know, keep that in mind. Colin Moriarty put out an interesting tweet, I thought. He says, CD Projekt is forecast to net $500 million in profit for its fiscal year. It gives 10% of profits to its employees as bonuses, which Adam Badowski just confirmed. They employ roughly 1,000 people. In that situation, the average bonus is $50,000 per person. Meanwhile, the median per capita income in Poland is approximately $5,000 a year. So it is a handsome bonus for what is, as some will say, what do you say, 6 weeks out? So 6 extra days of work that will gain you a $50,000 bonus. Now, once again, perspective. We do have the Borderlands 3 situation, I think it was. Was it 3 or 2? There were bonuses promised, and then bonuses were pulled. Now, I think CD Projekt Red, with the money they are going to make hand over fist with Cyberpunk 2077, and the money that CD Projekt in general makes through GOG, I'm sure these bonuses will be paid out. But once again, I think perspective is key. The other thing that we should be aware of is, to some extent, the labor laws that would be protecting these workers, because we don't know what terms CD Projekt Red would be employed at. So there is something a little bit different with that. That's also worth keeping in mind. But point being is, the reality here is, for 6 extra days of work, 6 extra weeks of bonus time, they're going to be employees making roughly a bonus of $50,000 this year, which is a lot of money, especially in Poland. That is a ton of cash. And that's nice. Now, the question is, and it is a fair question, is this is still a human sacrifice, right? Is the extra time in the studio working on the game, working harder, being away from your family, all that stuff, is it worth it for that chunk of change? I think that's up to each person. If you got to secure the bag mentality, I'm sure this is like, hell yeah, let's get to work, man. Let's get this out. I'm sure a lot of the team is eager to get the game out, man. The final stretch, right? This has been years of hype and discussion. I still vividly remember walking in 2018 into the E3 press room to check out Cyberpunk Behind Closed Doors, man. Like, I vividly remember that. And to think, like, now we're just about a little bit over a month away as I record this episode. I mean, it's crazy, man. So I'm sure they are as eager to get it done as humanly possible. I will say, for me, my initial statement on Twitter, I'm not one of those people, like, I'm not going to delete my statement because my Twitter, like, it's a knee-jerk reaction, right? Like, I'm not going to, like, hide that. I would say I would probably change my tune a little bit here because I think there is definitely a... To me, it sounds more like... I think there's a difference between, like, overtime and crunch. Like, to me, crunch is, like... We've heard about people sleeping in offices. We've heard about people like BioWare's kind of crunch culture. Like, we've heard some really brutal crunch stories. And I just think now we're starting to see a blurring between crunch and overtime. And to me, it's up to the people to decide, you know, is this something where, you know, is that 10% annual profit, is that worth it for them? And if so, I mean, you know, let's say it is Colin's numbers that he generated here. You know, let's say it is $50,000. Is that worth it to them? And, you know, after all the years of work and on and off crunch, by the way, it's not like suddenly the crunch is on and off crunch at CD Projekt Red. You know, I think there's a yin and yang to this. For me, I would say, you know, you got to take into perspective what they were through before this with CD Projekt Red. You know, I'm one of the people who I always try to treat CD Projekt Red evenly. A lot of people, and I stand by this aspect of my argument, people are like, why isn't this made a bigger deal when it comes to CD Projekt Red? And I'm like, I mean, I made a joke. I was like, because Witcher 3 good? Because I was like, anytime I ever have said anything like critical, right? I'm not negative about them. I love CD Projekt Red's games, and I have since The Witcher 2. I have been a fan of them since before any of the surge of Witcher 3 popularity. It was one of the first games I bought on Steam when I got my first ever gaming PC. Like, I have a fond memory attached to CD Projekt Red, man. They've provided me and all of us incredible games. I also think, like, the Witcher Tales Thronebreaker, that game is insanely good. And, you know, a lot of CD Projekt Red fans have skipped out on that one. It's one I strongly recommend. Like, they make amazing games, man. And so I joked saying, like, oh, people are just giving them a free pass because The Witcher 3 is good. But, like, you know, it's really, they're a tough company to be critical of, just because there is so much goodwill given to them by consumers. So when you do say, like, hey, this is wrong. And, like, for me, people came after me because I just said, I'm not shocked. That's the thing. Like, I just said, I'm not shocked. And the reason I'm not shocked is because I'm like, CD Projekt Red's still a company. Like, they are still a game dev that had, like, they had trouble. They had issues, man. Like, they had issues that they still do need to work out to this day. They are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And for me, I guess the way I don't carry it like I'm better than people, but I learned my lesson with Bethesda Game Studios, right? I thought there was, after Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout 3, Morrowind, you know, even to some extent Fallout 4, but you really think, like, how do you, like, there's no way this company just falls off a cliff. And then you get, like, the aftermath of Fallout 4, you get Creation Club, you get 76, and it's like, what the fuck? Like, I never would have predicted that. I don't think anyone could have. And I guess for me, that was, like, the strongest lesson I learned, where I'm just like, you know what? I'm not putting these companies on pedestals anymore, because it leads to, it circles back to my original point that I talked about on An Extra Slice of Ham. For those of you who are patrons, you'll know I made an episode called Game Companies Are Not Your Friends, right? I made a whole episode talking about, it was about CD Projekt Red. It was in response to the multiplayer monetization and how CD Projekt Red kind of took the the PR that they had been spinning out about the game and not being monetized. And I know, I'm well aware it's a separate product, it's separate on multiplayer, but a lot of their PR did not specify when clapping microtransactions and all forms of monetization. They did not specify that it'd be a separate product. I think it's a very important thing to indicate to the consumer who's hyping you up. But they continuously denied any form of microtransactions, even though I think sometime before the news really broke that there was a headline suggesting like they were going to look into monetization. But point being is when it was officially confirmed, people freaked out. And I was just like, I am not surprised. And the reason I'm not surprised is because I don't put this company or any company on a pedestal. And when you do that, the disappointment you set yourself up for is immense. Like, while CD Projekt Red plays like that buddy-buddy, you know, we're your friends, man. Like, they're a company. They are a company, and they will operate as such. I cannot stress that enough. And that's not to downplay any of the great things they do, but it's just that they are a game company. They are going to operate as such. And so when they do things like crunch and they do things like monetizing their multiplayer like the rest of the games industry, like they are a business. So when they see money on the table, they're going to take it. They're going to take it. And they know with all the hype of Cyberpunk 2077, the goodwill they have from consumers, you know, people are going to pay money in this multiplayer. And that's not to suggest that, oh, because it's monetized, it's going to be unfair. But it's one of those things where it was a story that was blown, I'd say, out of proportion. And I think there are fair arguments being made that even this story about what's happening with CD Projekt Red and some of its overtime for Cyberpunk 2077 may have been slightly blown out of proportion, too. I think it's because some people do want to just, like, see someone fall from their pedestal, too. There is definitely a notion of that. But I do think it's because people have put this company so high up that when they do anything remotely off, or really what's, I don't want to act like crunch should be a normal thing, but what has been standard in our industry and what we fought against, people were like aghast at the idea of CD Projekt Red actually doing this. And it's like, they have been doing this. And once again, I don't want to sound like a know-it-all. It's just, I'm trying to vent my thoughts out here too, because it's why I didn't make a video on it, man. Like, it's one of those subjects where it is perfect for a podcast. There's just so much to unravel. It's so conversational. And the reason, because I feel like a video, when I make a video, I like to make a point, right? And sometimes that point will be somewhat neutral like this, but I don't always like to make those videos because, you know, I like to be more conclusive in my thoughts. For this, it's more like, here's the facts, here's the information, here's my perspective on it. And that's fine, but I feel like it's better when you're making a discussion video to be like, this is my point I'm making, and this is why. One example would be like, here's why Final Fantasy 13 as a series isn't as bad as you think. And it's still a perspective-driven thing, but it's like, this is where I stand. These are my thoughts. This is why. You can choose to respect them or not, but this is it, right? With this, I feel like it's a very middle-of-the-road story. CD Projekt Red working a little bit of overtime. A lot of information out there. I appreciate the level of transparency from Adam Badowski. I that's one thing I've always admired from CD Projekt Red. They did it with the story length for Cyberpunk 2077. I have a video coming out on that this weekend. That'll be interesting to see how that does, because, you know, people are going to be like, why are you talking them up if they're doing something wrong? And so, whatever. But point being is that video will come out. Yeah, what is it? Today's Friday, so tomorrow, Saturday. And with that, let's move on to our next topic. Apologies if you hear me clicking around. When I man this show myself, I have to like have the entire podcast set up differently. All right, so our next bit of significant news that really just captured the industry by storm is the Spider-Man PS4 to PS5 upgrade. So, oh man, this has been a really interesting development for PlayStation. Because we got news the same day that Microsoft announced that they were acquiring Bethesda. We learned about how PlayStation was not letting you like carry over your saves or your copy of Spider-Man PS4 into the PS5 or something like that, or you wouldn't get the next gen upgrades with it. Essentially saying like pay or get the hell out. And so we just got a PlayStation blog post on Marvel Spider-Man Remastered. And it presents an interesting conversation for where remasters will go in this next generation, because they're money makers. They are certainly not going anywhere. But also, what Insomniac is doing So there have been some screenshots that have been put out, and they look phenomenal. Spider-Man PS4 already was a beautiful looking game. It looks even better now. They said, beyond improved models and materials, one of the biggest things we brought to the game is ray traced reflections and ambient shadows. We now have true reflections on the windows of buildings, and it looks stunning with our new skies and weather. This was something I actually indicated in my initial review in 2018 for Spider-Man PS4. You'll see I actually was looking at some of the windows in the review, highlighting that the way they actually portray the images in the windows, it actually can trick you into thinking like it's a true reflection. Now it is, and that's not something to scoff at. There's a reason why you don't see mirrors in games, and it's because they pretty much create a cell on the opposite end of the room that mirrors it. So you're really doubling the level space when you do that. And so when you're looking in the reflection of something, they have to like recreate that level on the opposite side. It's crazy, man. There is a power of technology here. Not a power of technology. That actually sounds incredibly unintelligent. It sounds like I'm talking out my ass, in fact. I never said I was a tech guy, but still, it's putting on display the power of the PS5. That's more so what I was trying to say here. And so, not only have they done that, they said it's not just environments. Our characters have also gotten a huge upgrade, from higher fidelity skin, eye, and teeth shaders to individually rendered strands of hair. The new tech and detail brings our characters and their performances to new life. This is where it gets interesting. This does bring us to one of our bigger changes. In order to bring the best performance to players with our next generation Spider-Man games, we have recast the face of Peter Parker. We loved working with John Bubniak on the original game. However, to get a better match to Peter Parker / Spider-Man actor Yuri Lowenthal's facial capture, we have cast Ben Jordan to be the new face model for Peter Parker on the PS5 console. He looks incredible in game, and Yuri's moving performances take on a new life. So definitely in action, it looks better. You can see it is more lifelike. That is 100% true. Let's continue reading. Obviously, the focal point of this conversation will be the face. Additionally, thanks to the power of the PS5 console, we're now able to target a higher frame rate through performance mode, which offers 60 FPS. This allows you to experience the beginning of Marvel Spider-Man's storyline like never before. One thing I have an issue with these next-gen consoles is how they still have modes. Like, these games should run at 60 FPS, right? Especially a 2018 game. Like, this shouldn't be, I pick a mode and it runs in 60 FPS. This should be a situation where, at base value, it looks as amazing as it does, and it runs at 60 FPS. That's just my two cents, right? As a guy who's not a tech nerd, I just think it's one of those situations where the game should be running perfectly fine. 60 FPS should be the standard, and it should look amazing. You know, it's about time now. It's 2020. It is about time this stuff starts to happen. All right, so let's talk about the face. The internet got into a really big stink about this one. Really big stink. A lot of people were extremely upset that Yuri Lowenthal's John Bubniak face was replaced by what seems to be a Tom Holland knockoff. The way I look at it is this. Number one, you know, at my base opinion, I am not a fan of this. I don't like it. I think he looks kind of silly. Not even because I was used to one, right? Like, it's not like I keep calling him Yuri Lowenthal, this John Bubniak Spider-Man. It's not like, you know, he was ingrained in my head for years and years and years, like Tobey Maguire, and suddenly you got Andrew Garfield stepping in or whatever. Not the case at all. But it's one of those things where, A, no one was asking for this. No one was asking for this at all. I don't know why they did it. They say it's to take advantage of the PS5 and the next-gen capture, and stop. B, it's clear that they're trying to create an MCU counterpart. And I don't know if they saw Avengers in the response to that, but, like, everyone outside of Kamala Khan looked like a fucking knockoff, and it looked terrible. It looks so silly, man. It looks ridiculous. What was great, I thought, about Spider-Man PS4 is it was its own thing. And some people may go like, oh, you're overreacting, or people who don't like this are overreacting. But you got to look at it this way. Spider-Man PS4 was the first Spider-Man game that created some semblance of duality with the character of Spider-Man, since really Spider-Man 2, where you'd go into the Daily Bugle, you'd run around as a knockoff Tobey Maguire, and you'd talk to J. Jonah Jameson, and you'd go out and take pictures on missions. That was like in 2005. The year was 2018 when that game came around, and actually had you playing as Peter Parker, making that a big part of his story. So I think, yeah, it's very obviously important how Peter Parker looks. But it's also, I think it's just important to establish like a, what would you say, like a game universe Spider-Man. Like, not everything has to connect to the movies, because point C that I was getting to is it's not like the game struggled to sell. It's not like people looked at this and went, who the hell is this? This ain't Tom Holland. What is this, man? Like, no. So I feel like it's change for the sake of change. I feel like they almost did it to justify that price hike. To sell that ultimate edition of Miles Morales. I think they did it so that they could excuse the lacking. I think they lacked the free upgrades. Let me go ahead and double check that. Spider-Man, PS4, PS5. We'll do free upgrade. Let's see what comes up here. All right, let's see here. PS4 players can't upgrade to my... Oh, what? All right, this is from Polygon. Hold on. Let's take a read here. But Spider-Man PS4 players can't upgrade to PS5 for free. Now, I feel like this is what I was saying earlier, but the title suggests otherwise. PlayStation 5 owners interested in Marvel Spider-Man will have to repurchase the game in a bundle with Spider-Man Miles Morales for a new console if they even owned it on PlayStation 4. Spider-Man Remastered, the improved version for PS5, will not have any sort of upgrade path for the PS4 version, as a Sony representative confirmed to Polygon over email. It will also not have transferable save files for the original game. Marvel Spider-Man is an enhanced version of Spider-Man. Oh my God. Oh, guys, this quote. Oh my God. This is the one where they say Marvel Spider-Man like 8 times over. I'm good. I'm not going to reread that to you guys. There aren't any plans to release this remastered as a standalone. See, this doesn't imbue any confidence to me about Miles Morales. It just sounds like Miles Morales is going to be a small ass game. And that's why they're pushing this so hard. So I think, previously, Sony said PS4 versions of launch games would include a free upgrade, but since Marvel Spider-Man Remaster isn't technically a standalone launch title, it's not eligible. So, I think, is Spider-Man PS4 backwards compatible? Spider-Man PS4 backwards compatible. It will run as a standard backwards compatible version of the game on a PS5, but the remaster you have to pay for. Okay. Yeah, man, it just sounds like they're pushing it then. I know that was an extra slice move where I look up information while we chat, but that is 100% one of those those situations where they're pushing it so hard, man. That does not build any remote confidence for me with Miles Morales. Miles Morales is probably going to be a short ass game. I'm sorry, you don't push a remaster of a complete game that hard. Especially in light of, like, you do PS Plus Classic, but then you don't put, like, Spider-Man PS4 in there just alone. It's like, you're obviously, like, especially when you got Bloodborne in there, you got God of War in there. You just got so many games in there, and then, actually, is God of War in there? I'm not sure, but I know Bloodborne's in there. That's all that matters. But, yeah, it's clear that they're doing everything they can in their power to subtly push you into buying the remastered, or going, $80, sure, or $70, sure, why not? Let me go ahead and get Spider-Man Miles Morales Ultimate Edition and enjoyed that. So ultimately, when it comes to the face, I don't see a point in it. I think it's just to connect to the MCU shit, which I think is also a waste of time. It was fine on its own. It's not like the game struggled to sell. At the end of the day, does it ruin anything for me? No. It's just one of those things where it's like, why, man? Like, why are video games so weird? Like, why do you got to do this? It's just going to annoy me. I don't know. I also liked This version of Spider-Man. Also, to me, just, it looks way too young. Yeah, I know Tom Holland looks really young too, but this version of Spider-Man just looks way too young. What I liked about John Bubniak's, imagine I'm saying his name wrong the whole time, it's like Bubniak or something like that. But John's Spider-Man PS4 model, I liked because he just looked his age. Now Spider-Man looks like the 17-year-old, right? Like, it doesn't look like the mid-20s Spider-Man that they were portraying, in my opinion. They're like, oh, well, actually, Ben Jordan's 26. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. No offense, but he doesn't look like it. When I shave my face, I sure as shit don't look like it either. Like, there was a a good in between, I'd say, for Spider-Man PS4's John face. But whatever, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. No, because half the time you're in the suit. So who really cares? Anyway, now we get into, after those two major bits of info, there really wasn't much news this week, in my opinion, that caught my interest. We move on to our patron questions. This is probably our longest segment of the show where we just go over all the crazy stuff you guys send our way. So let's start things off with Crazy Herb. With us just getting past the release of The Avengers, which upcoming game currently seems most likely to be the next AAA live service flop a la Anthem / Fallout 76 / Avengers. So if you notice with those three games as a track record, right, you see the game, you go, wow, this looks cool. Then you find out it's live service, and then you go, oh boy, why? And then there's no justifiable reason, and you start to see the greed underneath it, and you just hope to God that everything pans out all right. You really cross your fingers. But in the case of these three, it never really does. Man, Avengers, dude. Avengers is just... That game bugs me so much. It could have been so much better. It was clearly two different games. And like, as I've stepped away from it more, like I tried to make it my home base game. You guys know I'm still looking for a home base game. I just couldn't do it. The game's so boring and monotonous. Just constantly repeating the same missions. All right. So which would be next? I mean, the next live service game that comes to mind is Outriders, but what I played of Outriders, I really liked. I don't see that flopping. Maybe player base wise, it doesn't have the energy that like these other three games have, because you know, one's a BioWare game, one's Fallout, and the other is Marvel. But Outriders, dude, Outriders, that could be... I don't want it to flop, though. That's the thing. I'm a little biased. I don't want it to flop. That game looks awesome. So, and it plays awesome, feels awesome. It's just, it's got some like B-tier shitty humor to it. So that might be its Achilles heel. But yeah, I was looking, and it's not a live service game, but I think the next kind of flop that has like the same amount of question marks, although in different beats, would be like Godfall. Because you first saw it and you're like, what is this? And they're like, it's a looter slasher. And you're like, oh, it's a live service game. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, it's not. And it's just... the way they've handled like the PR beats, and then it's in every fucking show and they're really pushing it. Like, it's got all of those beats where I'm just like, this game is not going to be what anyone hopes it is. The difference though is that I don't see, maybe Godfall ends up being good, right? Like, I hold out hope because the game like aesthetically looks cool. But when I was watching the combat for that last state of play that they did, oh my God, so boring looking. Holy moly. So that would be my prediction. I think Godfall is the next kind of AAA live service looking flop. All right. Dow writes in, do you think Starfield will have playable alien races like how Elder Scrolls has it? See, I told you guys, I told everyone, ladies and gents, that you would have your Starfield here. Starfield having alien races, if those leaked screenshots are to be believed, I don't know how much your race will play a factor, given the fact that you really can't see the character in their spacesuit. But they are they in outer space? Are you always going to be wearing that spacesuit? It's a good question to ask. I would love that. I love how the Elder Scrolls starts off with races. But here's the thing. It's a branching thing. If you put races in the game, then you need to have the world respond to that. You need to have people acknowledge it. You need to have quests treat you differently. And so it's about if Bethesda feels that's worth their effort. Now, personally, I would like to see that. So that is my response. Do I think they will have them? No, because I think the idea is you're going to be like an explorer from either like another galaxy, or you're going to land somewhere, or you're just going to start off like, I don't know. They're going to transport you there. And maybe, you know, here's the thing is if those screenshots are to be believed, it's third person, you want to see your character. Maybe I'm going to change my tune a little bit. You know, maybe, because if it's third person, you're seeing your character, I doubt they're going to have you in a full suit of armor constantly. It would be really cool to play, because then maybe it changes how you start, like what planet you start on. Imagine that, like you pick a certain alien race, so you start on a different planet. Oh yeah, I'm gonna go with yes, because my heart wants that. All right, AC Denton asks for our game of the decade. In the last 10 years, that's a lot of games to go through. Nier Automata's up there. I really like Nier, but Persona 5 Royal stands out as probably the most influential game I've played ever. It's such a strong experience for me. You know, the way I look at it is like, I've never played a game that made me want to change how I work my channel and make cool stuff that like inspires people or excites people, or, you know, just like I had a new energy after that game. It's also the last game I can think of where I was like in shell shock afterwards. Like I couldn't play games. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was just in a trance. Like it just shook me to my core. And I know it sounds so sensationalist, but it's true, man. For like 3-4 days, I was just like, fuck, man, like what a game. What do I do with my life now? Like, I usually don't get that because I'm lucky enough to, sometimes I'm sent codes, but I pay for my games, but I'm lucky enough to always be going from game to game to game to game. So for me, I don't often have, and that all the more signifies to me when a game is very special, but I don't have those experiences truly as often now where a game, like I'm left like laying in bed thinking about it. Like when I finished Trails of Cold Steel, I sat there, I thought about it for a little bit. I talked to some buddies about it, but then I hopped into Lost Odyssey that night. Like, I don't know. I used to, like, when I finish a game, I just, like, chill, take the night off or whatever. You know, it depends. Like, if it's a review, which I haven't been able to do many, like, early access reviews and stuff. When it's a review, you know, 100%, man, like, I'm like taking my time to digest my experience because I think that's very important. But when it's like me just playing for myself, like I'm cool just moving on to the next thing. It's not like if I don't take that extra couple of hours, like suddenly I lose something in translation. Like, no. But yeah, game of the decade, I've got off track. I'd say Persona 5 Royal. That comes to mind. Obviously, Bioshock Infinite's up there. Skyrim's in there. Holy crap, man. Like, it's been a hell of a decade for games in the scheme of things. There's so much you could probably throw in there. You move it back a year, you could throw Dragon Age Origins in there. Like, there's just so much good stuff. I would go Persona 5 Royal. Jay Lopez writes in, "Sup dudes, enjoying the podcast a lot and keep up the good work." Thank you. My question is, if BGS announced a Fallout remake with all the bells and whistles, which one would you personally want, as well as which one do you think Microsoft would allow after the new deal? All good to rapid fire. I get it. Just realize you kind of answered the question on the podcast. Feel free to skip. Nope, we're not skipping. I don't even remember when we announced that. Or when we announced that, when we talked about that. I would personally want Fallout 3. I think that I have a video in production on this for next week that I'm going to go forward with. And it's that I think that given Microsoft's love for remasters, we've seen it with Halo Master Chief Collection. We've seen it with Age of Empires. We've seen it with Wasteland. I think Microsoft is a fan of remasters. They see value in it. They see value in digging into the past of their old IP. And even though they offer, you know, backwards compatibility for, say, Fallout 3 or New Vegas, where I can slide that into my Xbox One and play it, it's all good and great. I think they do know that a multi-platform release of like Fallout 3 remastered or Fallout New Vegas remastered or a bundle would serve them incredibly well financially. And it would definitely help them earn some of that money back that they spent on Bethesda, straight from the product they purchased themselves at that. I think that would be the first thing they do. I would want Fallout 3. If they did New Vegas, I would not certainly complain whatsoever. It would be extremely exciting. I don't see them doing like because you mentioned the bells and whistles. I think that would include like Fallout 4 shooting. That definitely is something that I would love to see, but I know that requires like reworking how skills function in the game, how they affect your accuracy. And so you have to go in and redefine some of the RPG mechanics in the game, which, you know, you gotta put in effort if you want to make a good product. So that's what I tell them, but I don't know if they're willing to do that when it's available backwards compatibly. So I would just say, through backwards compatibility. That's what I was looking for. And so I feel like, yeah, it would just serve them better financially. Just be like, all right, well, upgrade it, 60 FPS, maybe restore cut content, ship it, boom, good. That'd be cool. Dal writes in, if you could have any exotic animal, what would it be? I'd go with a black or white wolf. I don't know. I've never been that type of guy, you know? I don't look at wildlife that belongs in the wild and go, you know, like the people who have pet lions, I'm like, what are you doing, bro? Like, you're going to just wake up with a slashed neck at some point from one of these lions, man. Like, oh, boy. I guess, like, maybe a bear. Like, a bear seems, like, so cool, even though they terrify me. if you could somehow make that animal, it's not really exotic, but if like you can make that animal into something that would, you know, chill, relax, I'd be all over that. That'd be cool. Chris Cozy writes in with two questions. One, knowing that the Mass Effect remaster won't have multiplayer. Yes, I'm as disappointed as you, Maddie. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. What are your thoughts on a future standalone Mass Effect multiplayer game? Is there Horde mode enough on its own, or what are some other modes that would work? If it happens, I guess free to play with loads of microtransactions and maybe a PvP mode with AI mixed in. I feel it'd be an out-of-touch move. I feel like what was cool about the Mass Effect multiplayer is it was supplemental, and it was also really good. It did play a factor into how the endings had rolled out, where if you had the, I think it was like the Ready at War. There was a specific term for it, but I know most of you played Mass Effect 3, know what I'm talking about. I haven't actually played it since the game had come out. I have been away from Mass Effect 3 for an extremely long time, which is why I'm very excited to go back to it. But yeah, I don't think multiplayer on its own would work. The Horde mode sort of is enough, but in the multiplayer, they did put spins on the modes where you'd have to like capture command points or defend certain areas. So there were like built-in modes within the Horde itself. But I think that's why it was acceptable. It was essentially just Horde mode, so it was okay for it to just be supplemental. If it's on its own, there's a higher expectation. I would love to see the thing, man. Like, Mass Effect multiplayer stays underrated. It's just because what happened is that I still think Mass Effect 3 is a good game despite its ending. I think it's a good game. And then you had like this amazing multiplayer game on top of it. It's just like, what? Like, oh my God, incredible. I don't know if it would actually happen, but I would love to see them roll things back and bring it in to the remaster. Someone had actually pinged me when I was talking about how the endings, I think because it was on an episode of the podcast, how the endings may work. And there was something that was patched in that kind of made it so that you didn't have to like grind the multiplayer and you could just get like the true ending, so to speak, in Mass Effect 3, which, you know, the hell is even that? All right. Number two from Chris Cozy. As a Halloween idea, can you guys dress as the Trailer Park Boys? I think Carrick could be Julian, Maddie could be Ricky, and Dustin could be Bubbles. I have an oddly high amount of Canadian pride for that show, considering it's about trash. Yeah, the way Dustin was talking about that show, I definitely want to give it a look. I'm sure they'd love that idea. I know Dustin would be all over it. He said it's one of his favorite of all time now, yeah? So, Tropical Ice Cow writes in, what are your thoughts on the Xbox One X sales increase of 750% on Amazon for people ordering wrong consoles when pre-ordering opened? All I can really say on this is that the people who made articles, who were just fucking loudmouths on social media about the idea that consumers won't get confused. You're projecting. Where are you now? Right? Like, there were so many people out there preaching, and I'm just like, no, man, like, this name overlap doesn't work. It does not work, man. Like, as someone who has a mother, who has a son, me, who is highly invested in video games and talks about them all the time, and there have been times, and it's not like I'm upset about it, but like there have been times where my mom has gotten the wrong game when I was a kid. Now, it did pan out. Like, there have been times where she got me the wrong Batman game, and I ended up getting Batman Vengeance, and I fucking love Batman Vengeance. But point being, man, is like, or when I wanted Final Fantasy, and she got me Kingdom Hearts, dude, like, dude, you know, like, what a great miss by my mom. That is incredible. So, like, look, misses happen, and, you know, like, these parents come in, they're not knowledgeable, but they want to make their kids happy, and, like, your naming has to be in order. Now, I know, how does Mama Maddie Plays mix up Kingdom Hearts with Final Fantasy? I don't know if, like, she went in there looking for Final Fantasy, and they said, we got something that has Final Fantasy in it. I don't know how that happens, but all I'm saying, man, is it happens. Parents are parents. You know, they're just trying to make their kids happy. So I'm not shocked at all that people ordered the One X. And to the people who were out there preaching like, no, it's not going to happen, please be quiet. Please be quiet. 750% is not a small increase, by the way. That is thousands of systems that were purchased by accident. That is insane and terrible. And once again, highlights Microsoft's awful naming structure of One X. Call it the Series L or something, right? Like, call it Series, put a different letter there, because when you use Series X, One X, people are going to go, huh, what's the difference, right? The information, the labeling, anyone who's coming in who's new is going to be fucking baffled by what Xbox is doing. And that's why I think the Series S will do just fine. But people are going to be like, what's the difference between the 1X Series S? Like, dude, oh my God. It confuses me. I'm an enthusiast, but like, you just look at that and you're like, you scratch your head. You're like, who came up with the naming convention here? All right. So Jay Lopez asked Dustin, he just got his new PC set up. What monitor do you recommend at 1440p? Also, I need games to play for PC, my first time, and I've been playing PlayStation since PS1. Wow, welcome to the crew. Do I have this bookmarked? Fuck, it's on my laptop. All right, yeah, so I was just looking at monitors, and I was looking at one. It was a 2K monitor, right? So there's 4K, which I think 4K is supported on screens. I'm going to try my best here to help you out, okay? Obviously, I'm not the tech guru of the show. It really goes on the hierarchy. Carrick, Dustin, myself, I would say I have learned from them. And I was researching my monitor, and I believe until a certain screen size, 4K is, you're able to achieve that. Like, it has to be a certain size. I don't think, say, you could have like a, could you have like a 28-inch 4K screen? I don't think so. But point being is, let's verify that first. Let's do this together, chat. Can you have a 4K monitor at 28 inches? Oh, there we go. Lenovo 4K monitor. I stand corrected. Let's see if I did 20 inches. I thought there was a screen size thing. I think 28, what is, with 2020 vision, if you want a monitor that's larger than 15 inches, ideally, you would ideally want a monitor with a 2K resolution instead of 1080p. Even with a 2K monitor, however, once you get above the 20-inch screen, you should start to see a difference by using a 4K monitor. Okay, so there is a minimal. Okay. I was not incorrect on that. Just my order of operations in my head. You guys are with me on this journey, man. We're learning this together. I was looking at a 2K monitor, however, because I think like 4K monitors are ridiculously expensive. This Lenovo one isn't bad, though. I'm looking at it right now. 28-inch Lenovo 4K monitor. Let's see how many hertz it is. If it's even got it. It's not showing it. View all specs. Let's see here. Hertz. HDMI. It's got a display port. That's good. But this thing is $270, which is pretty cheap. 50 to 60 hertz. Interesting. Okay. So it's not the 144 where you could really, that's probably why it's cheaper. The 4K 144s are pretty freaking expensive. Just know that for a 1440p monitor, you're definitely cutting the cost to like the 200s. Let me look up a specific one because I don't have it on me right now. Dell has some good monitors. Acer especially. I'd say depending on your budget, if you can spend in the 200s, go with an Acer monitor. They have pretty good 1440p monitors that are like 27 inches. I don't know why Siri is going off. Anyway, that's what I'd go with. That's around the 200 area. But once you're there, maybe you could look a little bit into 4K if you're looking to scratch that 400 area. I don't know what your funds are looking like, man, but 1440p, you'll get along just fine. Just make sure you do 144 hertz. That much I know. Games to play, though, I don't know if you're like trying to stress test your rig or if you're just looking for PC exclusive games, so to speak. If you don't have, once again, if you don't have a lot of money, like I'd say hop on the Epic Game Store. They're always giving away some free games. But like, don't be that person. Like my friend, he got, I remember he got, his PC and like, he immediately played like old Xbox games on it. And I'm like, bro, like use what power you have. Like, why are you playing like KOTOR? Like why? Star Wars Squadrons came out today as I'm recording this. And, this game looks phenomenal, man. I'm excited to play this one. I should have a video out next week on it. That's when you can look into what else they got here. What would be a good PC game? Look up PC Game Pass. That is actually a really good place to go. I do PC Game Pass. You can just test all types of things, man. Go crazy with it. All right, sorry. I know that was a lot more long-winded than if Carrick or Dustin were here, but I'm trying my best. Horse of Fire writes in, will there be fishing in Phoenix Rising, or will there be fishing in Starfield, like on other planets, etc.? That would be amazing. Okay, so I looked up Phoenix Rising, and I typed in even like Phoenix Rising game, and all I'm getting is Phoenix Rising FC. So I don't, Phoenix Rising, I don't, I think you're thinking of like Ashes of Creation, I think it was. Nothing's coming up for that though. Will there be fishing in Starfield? That would be kind of cool though. I like that idea. Loki writes in, do you think it's possible in any way for Microsoft to buy BioWare from EA, considering BioWare's past two games haven't been hits? They have so many RPGs right now. It would make sense if it ever happened. This is a great question. I think it's very well possible, but I think the stronger reality is that you see EA like shutter BioWare and then some of the higher ups leave and they create their own studio and they go independent. I think that's more than likely. I think once you leave EA, you don't want someone else hanging over your head. Even if it's like a seemingly flexible company like Microsoft, I don't know if you transfer over to that. Now, if it's just BioWare as is, I would not be shocked if Microsoft wanted to buy it from them, because think of Bethesda Game Studios was like a core of the old Xbox. I mean, Obsidian partially was. And then you look at BioWare, who was like fundamental to the rise of RPGs on Xbox. Like, it makes so much sense. It would be absolutely incredible. I would love to see that happen. I think it's possible. But I think you need to see EA like relinquish that. And I think more likely you don't see that happen. Because EA would just like, even if BioWare is at their worst, they're still making the money somehow. Where if EA were just to sell them outright, do they make enough to like sit on that stack of cash? I mean, they could just sit with their EA Sports and be fine. I don't know. I don't think it's possible, because I don't think you can just like trade companies like sports cards. Horse of Fire writes in again, for Starfield, I was wondering if you could build cities and do engineering and harvest ore with machines you build for engineering / building, just like you were able to do in the old PC Star Wars Galaxies before the jump to Lightspeed expansion, or they will not have the level of complexity for building / harvesting, etc. It's really hard to say, given the fact that we don't know a lot about Starfield. It really goes into how in-depth they want to make their settlement building, which seemingly is in the game. I won't even call it settlement building, maybe like home base building. It would be really cool if you did have like engines running and machines running that, because we did see I think it was Contraptions was the name of the DLC for Fallout 4, where they did give you machinery that like would produce ammo and all this stuff. So Fallout 4 did tinker with that a little bit. I don't know if that carried into 76. I don't think it did, because ammo was like a very precious resource. But yeah, I would definitely say like that's something you could safely imagine coming over into Starfield. That'd be cool. So let's go ahead and Natural Calamity posted, I know what you're thinking. This is an extra slice thing, man. I'm surprised he put this in the podcast section. I know what you're thinking. What is this? Mint green tea watermelon. It's a mother yuckin' avocado smoothie. I gotta admit, not bad. Disgust. What in the fuck? Hold on. Is that actually a thing? Avocado smoothie. Oh my god, it's a fucking thing. All right, we're moving on. I'm not doing this. My fat cock writes in. Oh god, I'm just getting trolled all over the place. Is there a game you love where the mechanics were garbage, but the story was so enticing you couldn't stop? For me, that's Red Dead Redemption 2. Felt like Arthur was regaining his range of motion after being in a full body cast for 2 months. Yeah, I think that'd probably be my answer too. I don't think Red Dead Redemption 2 played that well. Like, even mission design wise, it was always like, okay, how's this going to turn into a shootout? Otherwise, it was a really good story. Conversely, is there a game you love with great mechanics but a garbage story that you also love? For me, that's Sonic Adventure 2. I feel like without the inclusion of Maria, so many furries could have been avoided. A game that has great mechanics but a garbage story. I would say pretty much like every Warriors game ever. I love Dynasty Warriors. I love Samurai Warriors. Hyrule Warriors is fun. Fire Emblem Warriors, they're all fun, but their stories are always garbage, but they're just fun beat-em-ups with great progression systems, and I adore them for that. Lord Shane Core writes in, what is your favorite Mass Effect moment in the original trilogy? My favorite moment is when you had to defend Tali in front of the Quinarian Admiralty Board. Admiralty Board. Reading is not my specialty today, it seems. Favorite moment in the whole trilogy. Obviously, one is the ending part of Mass Effect 2. Of course, punching the reporter out. That's another really popular one that I really liked. I liked the jailbreak with Jack in Mass Effect 2 as well. I thought that was really neat. Kind of caught me off guard. Just something about it just seemed very different. I don't know how to describe it, to be honest. Once again, these games are very vague in my brain because I played Mass Effect 2 a little late. I think I played that in 2011 or 12. I got it for Christmas. Mass Effect 3, I played on launch. I haven't played it since. There goes my dog. Mass Effect 1, I played in 2008, and then I replayed it, I want to say 2010. So it's been a good chunk of years since I've dove back into any of these games. Now we move on to Vault 101 guy, who writes in saying, number one, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember a Bethesda game being leaked besides Starfield. I wonder why. And it seems like the leaks happened right when Microsoft acquired them. So I would say you're somewhat correct. Bethesda did have Fallout 4 scripts leak, which did suggest kind of when the game was set and how things are being handled with that. As for the timing of it, at least based off what Scolzi was saying in one of his videos, it seems like these images have been around for a while and then they just kind of got out. Like they were already on the internet and then they just got out. So it seems like it was more so just strange timing. But that's just based off, like I said, what he said in his video. So you can take that as you will. Outside of that, other leaks from Bethesda games, I'm trying to think, like Wolfenstein, Doom. Nothing really comes to mind. Yeah, they're pretty locked down with their stuff, man. And I think it's because of the culture that they have. That's the thing. Bethesda may not make like the best games ever, but they do have people who give a shit. And I do commend that. I don't think Fallout 76 was a give a shit product at all. But I think outside of that, if you erase that from history, I think most of them you can see like between Dishonored, Prey, even The Evil Within, which I'm not a fan of, but like, what else? Elder Scrolls Online, Fallout, and so on. The previous Fallout games. I think you can really say that you can see they care. Number two, do you believe there's other life in the universe? Yeah, of course. The universe is too big for there to. It's only just be us on Earth. That's my logic, at least. My nerd logic. All right, question one from Natural Calamity. He's only got three this week. I'm shocked. No offense, Natural, but I'm very shocked. One, when was the furthest vivid memory you have of being visibly excited for a game? Getting up and dancing in excitement, singing, and your skin crawling. My vivid memory of this was Saints Row the Third, sitting down, hold on. This isn't actually me reading. Hold on. My last vivid memory of this was Saints Row the Third, sitting down stairs up to my, up to my counter. It's downstairs is one word, comma, up to my counter, sitting in my underwear and eating Cocoa Puffs as one does. Seeing the trailer pop up on my YouTube feed, I remember jumping in excitement, seeing the VTOL, the dubstep gun, killing folks with a shark shotgun. Holy shit. Running around that. I didn't say that. Holy shit, by the way. That's what he wrote. Running around the house singing James Brown. I feel so good at the top of my lungs. So my question is, when was the furthest you've had any sort of insanity? Or do you even have this level of insanity? I will say this. Fallout 4. Obviously, I think I don't think I need to really say more than that. Fallout 4 drove me up a wall with like childlike excitement. I think a big part of that was also just having a community to like share my excitement with. So there was definitely that. What else was there? The acquisition, Microsoft acquiring Bethesda, that was like fuck yeah. Like, that was, I was extremely excited about that. I had, like, a little pep in my step. As for a game that had me, like, jumping up and down, I remember, this is more career-oriented, but I remember when I, it's funny you bring up Saints Row. I got my review copy of Saints Row, the fourth Saints Row. I think it was called Saints Row 4. I don't even remember at this point in time. The game is solid, but the series has gone dormant since. But yeah, I remember my review copy came in, and it was like it was my first ever review copy. And I was like, they gave me 2 weeks to review the game. And I remember like actually jumping up and down, and I sprinted out. I showed my mom, and then I got so excited that I crashed. Like, I started downloading the game and I passed out on my couch. So that was one that was 2013 or 14. I was really, really excited about that. That was more a career oriented thing. I wasn't like super, super stoked at, you know, the idea of like the game really. You'll probably see me at my most insane if they bring back the Old Republic in like a very faithful fashion. You will see me lose my shit. Question two. Actually, you know, let me just emphasize that a little bit more. Not even lose my shit. Like, I've had actual moments where, like, I'm taking a shower or I'm, like, on my walk, and I think of, like, if KOTOR got announced, like, a remaster, or if they brought it back, and I start to feel, like, a dopamine rush. Like, the idea of it, like, that's how obsessed I am with this series. The very fucking idea of it has me stoked. Imagining if it actually happened, I think I would rupture a lung screaming so loud. And I'd probably break the ears of my audience. I'd probably even cry. Question two. CD Projekt Red announced they are going to have their staff work 6 day weeks leading up to the release of Cyberpunk 2077. I don't feel like I need any developer to crunch so I can play a game. Mental health and family time are important. I agree. However, I don't understand how this practice is different to retail workers who have to put in long hours for the holiday season. I know a lot of people who work retail open 6 to 8 a.m. and close 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day from November to the new year, and the same thing in other occupations. Even though I don't see those practices as frowned upon, why is crunch when it comes to gaming seemingly frowned upon, but no one bats an eye when your UPS driver works long hours during the holiday season, retail workers making sure you can get your holiday gifts, or construction workers working on roads and buildings? So this is totally fair, and I kind of wish I brought this up in my initial discussion. I think a big part of it is really that the conversation focuses on how you can fix game crunch. And it's kind of culture, really, because that's what people refer to it as. They're like, it's a culture. And I don't think that means that it shouldn't happen, or like, it's okay it's happening in other areas, right? Like, I don't think that's the idea. Like, because we want to get rid of game culture, we do want it, or we don't care about UPS drivers and all that stuff. I think that's also... No, actually, you know what? That'd be incorrect. I just really think it's more so that. It's not that people don't want that. I even had someone tweet at me saying, like, why don't you just work retail if, like, you know, you think this is human sacrifice? And I'm just like, I don't think that has anything to do with the situation at hand. You know, I guess it's more so that I think that's where, like, unions step in and stuff. If I am correct on that, someone can by all means send a message or post a comment letting me know if I'm incorrect on that. But I do believe that's where unions would step in. And I know there are people who want to, like, unionize the games industry, but I always thought that was, that conversation seemingly comes up when studios get shut down all of a sudden, like you have a Telltale situation. So I agree. I think it's bullshit that you have to fill these companies' agendas because they want to maximize a profit. At the end of the day, I think whether it's gaming, it's your UPS driver, it's someone working as a cashier, I think it's bullshit either way. But that's just my two cents. It's a great question, though. Question three for Mafia 4. What do you think they go with? Maybe a sort of mule storyline, how the cartels connected the mafia and how drugs are smuggled into America back then. Besides that, I can't really think of what time they could go to and what they could maybe do. Maybe Shanghai in the West Coast area. What are your ideas? I would like them to take a true... See, the thing is with Mafia is they have these great cities, but they never make them explorable with side content. So, quite frankly, that's what I want. I don't care where they go, Because at this point, it's not even about that. I know they can make good stories. I know they can make these intriguing worlds wherever they go. They've done it for Mafia 1 Definitive Edition, 2, 3. That's not my concern. My concern is filling it with stuff that's going to pull for my attention and keep me invested in the game world that isn't just mindless side content. That is my priority. Skooma Vendor. All right. Don't know if it's just me, but all these Starfield leaks aren't exciting me at all. Not like the Fallout 4 and even 76 to an extent. Think it may be that it's a setting that Obsidian has literally done and done very well. That, and you also have Mass Effect Remaster on the way. It's going to be quite a bloated genre and setting. Well, that's totally fair. I don't think anyone should be getting excited for it, but in all fairness, this shouldn't... I think the idea is leak number one should have, I think, piqued a lot of people's curiosity. From that point in time, I don't blame anyone for not being excited by the leaks, because as I've said in, I think, two videos now, they're not exciting leaks. Like, it's just seeing what the game looks like. Like, seeing the spacesuit tells you a lot, right? It tells you kind of the... maybe the vibe that Bethesda wants to go for with this game. Seeing the HUD tells you a little bit, right? Like, there's little telling points, but none of this would generate any hype at all whatsoever. 76 didn't leak. 76 was a game that was teased, and then we got information through Jason Schreier of Kotaku at the time that it was going to be an online survival RPG. And I remember instantly seeing the interest on my channel for that game tank. I'll always remember seeing, like, literally the number line was, like, straight, like, on a plateau, and it fell off a cliff. It was actually fascinating. But yeah, man, like, it's one of those things where the Fallout 4 leak was different. There was a lot of build up there. We got scripts. Then nothing happened for the game for, like, half a year. Then suddenly it's Bethesda's first E3. Like, there was a chain reaction of moments there that made Fallout 4 so hype, I think. Obsidian did just do it very well, but Obsidian does hub worlds, right? They do hub areas that are not nearly as expansive. Bethesda Game Studios is going to be far more open, far more interactive. I think that's another thing. Mass Effect, once again, hubs, great RPG, incredible choice and consequence, but a very different game. So I think all of that does change things. Funk Rat with our final write-in says, not a question this week, just a reminder to you three and all the listeners out there to stay hydrated and have a great week. Let me go ahead and take a sip as we wrap this up. I hope all of you out there are doing the same. It's funny. My voice has been pretty good this episode, but I'm now, just as we're wrapping this up, getting a little raspy. So perfect timing for us to conclude episode 271 of the Ham Radio Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed just this solo episode. I appreciate those of you who are understanding with how the situation unfolded between myself, Carrick, and Dustin, and how we managed to get this episode done. So hopefully you find this worthwhile, you find it enjoyable. We'll be back to our normal stuff next week, where it's going to be us three having a good time, making stupid jokes, and all of that good stuff. So for now, I hope you guys enjoyed episode 271. Keep an eye out for the Patreon and members exclusive video coming out around sometime this weekend. Should be a really good time. I think people are really going to enjoy it. It's focusing on some special 360 games, as I alluded to earlier. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll talk to you guys soon. Stay sexy, stay active. I love you all. Peace.